Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob.
And a happy end of August, everybody. Rob Hernandez along with Gary D'Amato. I am in Palm Springs, at least the Palm Springs area. Gary D'Amato at the Caledonia headquarters. And Gary D., I envy you, you're home. after the week we had up in Managua, which was fun but long, I got back, I landed, got home, repacked, got about 5 hours of sleep, and then left at about 3 in the morning on Monday when I saw that Bobby Stricker and Chloe Chan were going to play in the first group off on at 7 a.m. At one of the courses at Mission Hills. So it feels like I really haven't been home, but it's been a fun stretch, a busy stretch, and we'll talk more about the State Open later, but it's been good. I mean, we've seen a lot of people, haven't we?
Wow, we sure have. You more than me. As you mentioned, I've been home now for a couple of days, Rob, and you're still chasing, you're following the sun like Ben Hogan, I guess. You're all over the map from the North Woods of Wisconsin out to Palm Springs following the LPGA qualifying. Quite a run for you.
Well, and I'm living the Palm Springs life. I'm in one of these classic. It's a Motel 6. I shouldn't even say the name of the place. I've been out here now like I don't know 7-8 years in a row. I mean, you know, I started coming when we were living in, you know, just over the hill in Temecula, but typically and it's the way it's been this year. You know, we've got 5 women from Wisconsin at LPGA Upstream Tour Qualifying School. And you spend a lot of time at the golf course trying to chase them down. So Mackenzie Hahn had a 7 a.m. tee time today. I caught up with her just after the turn, followed her in, and then she finishes. Then Taylor McCorkle and Tatum Beck, Taylor from Oregon, and Tatum from Waterford were going out at over at Mission Hills. And I followed them for about 6 holes, thinking I could get in the car and over to Indian Wells, which is about a half-hour drive to the one course not at Mission Hills. And got there, missed Bobby Stricker on 10, so picked her up on 12, followed her in with a brief stop to see Chloe Chan tee off on 10 and go out, and then talked to Bobby, went back out, saw Chloe, and then boom, you're done, and before you know it, it's 4:30, and I got there at 9, and it's that kind of day. I mean, it's that kind of week. It's qualifying school, and right now Wisconsin has 2 women in the Sunday round, Chloe Chan, who will be a senior at Wisconsin, shot 71 today on the heels of a 67 yesterday. The 71 came at Indian Wells Country Club. She is actually T29. She was T40 when she walked off the course, but that means some of the gals at her number over at the Mission Hills course, Gary, must have had tough rounds. So she slides up, as does Bobby Stricker, with a 200 par 70. She goes from a tie for 1/10 to a tie for 69th. So they will be playing Sunday. And at this point, Gary, if they hold their positions, they're easily into the second stage of LPGA Tour qualifying. And this year it's a qualifying series it's a qualifying series for the Q Series. It's kind of complicated. They've had this Q Series now for all the women from the LPGA Tour who don't get in the top, let's say, top 125, 144, whatever the number cutoff is. Then they have a tournament for them to try to regain status. And then the women who qualify through the 2 stages of Epson Tour qualifying and LPGA/Epson Tour qualifying, join them. Very complicated. I know that Bobby and Chloe and everybody has got it figured out, but right now it's looking pretty good for those two.
If they get to the next stage, Rob, do they have are they guaranteed Epson Tour starts, or do they have to get to the final stage?
They are guaranteed status. Now, Emily Lauterbach got to the second stage last year, and you know, there's just a lot of women, much like the men's tour, a lot of women playing every week on the LPGA Tour. That kind of closes the door then for some of the rookies on the LPGA Tour. They slide down to the Epson Tour, and then they take away spots from people like Emily Lauterbach, who got 4 starts on the Epson Tour this year. And if you don't play well, you don't get reshuffled up. And so it kind of feels like for some of these gals, somewhat of a dead end. But to answer your question, you need to get to the second stage to get status. It used to be that if you made the if you posted a 72-hole score here, you would get status and starts, as Tess Hackworthy has in the past, and even Emily Lauterbach in the past. But it just seems like there's more women playing golf at the professional level and fewer spots for them to play.
Yeah, because status doesn't guarantee starts, right? I mean, you've got status on the tour, but everyone's playing, it's hard for you to get in.
It's priority stuff. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, how odd it looks on the PGA Tour champions. You know, they've got all sorts of weird categories that limit the numbers in each category. And I think there's one category, for example, on the Champions Tour for guys who are 50 years old, so that they have a chance when they come out to play, make money, and then gain status through the money list, which is ultimately the top priority level in each tour. In here, it just seems like, you know, each week there's at least four sponsors exemptions. You see a lot, Gary, you see a lot of women that whose names you recognize from, you know, U.S. amateurs, some, you know, veteran LPGA members who come down. It's a little bit of everything, and it's hard to get status. And as evidenced today, you know, Tatum Beck, Taylor McCorkle do not get status, neither does Mackenzie Hahn, the former Badger. But, Gary, neither did Jensen Castle, a former U.S. amateur champion, I believe, from a couple years ago. And she just didn't have a good week here. And so it really is difficult.
Well, it's the old saying that you got to play well at the right time, because you can play great all year and have one bad week when in qualifying and your season's over and you've got nowhere to play the next year. So it's all about time. It's all about trying to peak for these qualifiers, and that's easier said than done. It's hard to peak for a game. I mean, we see that we saw Tiger Woods try to do it for the majors and was very successful at it. But it's just hard to peak for events. You just never know when you're going to play your best golf.
Well, and to that point, I asked, so Steve Stricker is caddying for Bobby this week, and I did ask him today, you know, from his experience, you know, did the year that he made it, you know, and if you remember, I believe he missed three times before he made it on the fourth try.
Yeah.
And I asked him, did you feel any different with your game, just anything about it that said this was the year? And he said, no, it just happened. And and so, and that's kind of what I feel is happening with Bobby this year. The one year she made it through, it was, I don't want to say accidental, but she didn't expect to get through. There were still flaws in her game that made it, you know, she wasn't as strong a player as she is now. Gary, I've been watching her, you know, probably as much as any of the five gals that were here this week. And when she misses the green, her short game is phenomenal. And it's consistently phenomenal. I mean, I haven't seen her miss anything. She's gotten up and down. And when we talk up and down, she's come close to holing chips that she's just trying to get close. And, you know, her putting is very good. Couple of misreads here and there. But, you know, for all practical purposes, she's taken a step there. Where I think she has room to grow, and hopefully this gives her the confidence. It's just between the ears and standing over certain shots and saying, I can handle this. There was one that was particularly frustrating to Steve the other day. She was in the middle of the fairway, might have been on a little bit of a mud area on one of the fairways, and kind of chunked it in the water on a par five. And all of a sudden you go from, you know, easy, you know, green regulation, two putt par, to a double bogey, and now you've got to rally from that. And, you know, we've all done it, but, you know, she is getting to that point where, you know, those kind of things shouldn't bother her. And I tell you what, and she talked about it yesterday. She called her mom, and they were talking about, you know, the bar she has set for herself is so much higher this year. And when she hits a shot like that, it hurts, and she kind of stews over it more because there are so few bad shots now and around that the bad ones really ring louder, she said. And that's true. I think when you know, that was very much a hiccup in a round that was otherwise exceptional on the Arnold Palmer course at Mission Hills.
Yeah, I think with Bobby Roberts, it's always been she struggled with self-belief, I think, a little bit. I talked to her about a year ago and just interviewed her. I can't remember where we were, but she was talking about Izzy, her younger sister, and said, I wish I had Izzy's confidence. Izzy's so feisty and confident and has so much self-belief. And she said, I don't have that. But I think obviously she's gaining that. And once she fully believes in herself, And as you said, she's made strides in her short game. I think the sky's the limit, but that self-belief is so important, and hopefully she's going to latch on to that here.
And I don't know if I mentioned it, but if I didn't, she birdied three of her last four to get to two under and really waited until late in the round, and she's kind of, she says that's becoming a bit of a habit where, she doesn't start to really turn it on until she has to. And then I asked her, Gary, what did you end up majoring in at Wisconsin? And she said, journalism. I said, Bobby, that's a deadline. That's what we call a deadline. And
yeah.
I told her that, countless examples of situations, including, our state open copy, those were long days up at Monaco. I would get back, and maybe get done, processing video, uploading the photos, and then, getting around to the report card. By the time I got around the report card, I was dead dog tired. I knew that Mike Davis was coming in at like 4 a.m. to post before he heads out to Blue Mound to do his, he's on the maintenance crew there. And, he's our guy that posts our stories and does a wonderful job of making us look good. And it was literally getting to the point where I was, I would catch a couple hours of sleep, get up, and, so that my head was fresher. We do our best work when our minds are good. And, we had, and we'll talk about it in a second because this was a weird state open, but it was hard to process. And I feel like, that's probably a quality that, journalists have. Journalism majors certainly have been taught about deadlines. She hit her deadline today, though, Gary. She got to 2 under and moved up a bunch. And it looks like she wrote a Pulitzer Prize-winning piece without much effort, and it was done in plenty of time.
It's funny, Rob, how often I've sat at my keyboard and watched the minutes and the previous one turn into hours, and all of a sudden there's a deadline looming, and then you start writing and you get it done.
Yeah.
Sounds like she did it on the golf course today, which is great, saving your best for last. Nothing wrong with that.
No, and she was glad to hear that others have that affliction, so I'm going to blame the J school, the Madison one. I don't know. It sounds like it was the same thing taught at Whitewater, same thing taught at Eau Claire, all the other great J schools in the state that, have turned out people for generations. I think we all share that. We tend to do our best work with our backs to the wall, and that's kind of what makes the profession exciting. But golf is another matter, and especially when you've got your dad on the bag, you don't like to put him through the ringer too.
Yeah, Steve, I'd imagine that I can only imagine how much of a comfort that is for Bobby to have her dad on the bag. I would love to know what they talk about, between shots and that she's getting ready to hit shots. You probably know more than I what they talk about, Rob, but I can only imagine that's of great comfort to Bobby.
Yeah, he'll let her read putts, and then, she'll, kind of say what she's seeing, and he'll confirm or say, look at it, maybe in a cup inside or something like that. But for the most part, they're pretty much on the same page. They also have, this year they aren't going to the same place for dinner every day, but they may be going to the same place tonight because she shot 200 today. She was at Cheesecake Factory last night, had nachos and something else, and and there was something else that they had that was good. But they also, after the round, will stop off at Starbucks. She didn't have a lunch because they teed off at 11:20, so she was hungry after that, and now I think she's just hungry to get to the next stage, as is Chloe Chan, here by herself this week. But I can't wait to see what this experience does for her. With I didn't realize that she and Bobby were never teammates. Bobby left when Chloe came in, but Chloe and Bobby's sister Izzy will be teammates this fall, and Izzy's getting a great leader in Chloe Chan, and I've just been really impressed with her. So we've been seeing this now, Gary. We get to tell if they do get through to the next stage and then get through to the LPGA or the Epson Tour, if it's anything like what we've seen on the men's developmental tours this week, boy, I'm not sure they want to get into this. Why don't you tell our listeners the scores of some of our guys on the tour and how well you've got to play just to make a cut these days?
It's crazy. I just called up the Albertsons Boise Open presented by Chevron on the Korn Ferry Tour, where we have Hunter Eichhorn playing. Rob, he opened with a 73, but bounced back with a 65. You would think 4 under would be good enough to make the cut, but no, he missed it, looks by a shot, right? And so you pack up and you wait for the next one. It's tough. And then we've got players in the PGA Tour Americas, let's see, one of them made the cut, right, of our three?
No, none.
None made the cut.
Wow. I wonder did not make it with Pearson Hunt. He shot 66 in the first round and followed with a 73. Sam Anderson was rock steady, 70-70, another four under. And I believe that was the one where the cut came at 7 under.
Wow, that's just incredible. Yeah, I've got the scores up now. It's good. Sam Anderson, I think, missed the cut in his last start, too, but he's still holding on to a top 10 spot in the Fortinet Cup standings. And, of course, you got to finish in the top 10, right, to go on to the Corn Ferry Tour. And I think there's only – are there two events left after this one, I believe? Maybe three.
I know that the big one is coming next week, and there's going to be a big local presence at the Monday qualifier. It's the CRMC Championship presented by Gertens. It'll be in Brainerd, Minnesota. And it used to be a Dakotas Tour event, I believe, that got transitioned into a PGA Tour Canada event, now a PGA Tour Americas event. And it looks like, so they posted the field. Sam Anderson, Pearson Hunt, Coulter Smith will be there. And Thomas Longbella is going to try to come back from his wrist injury. I'm kind of surprised because.
Wow.
Yeah, I had heard that it was worse than initially thought. But I know when he texted a couple weeks ago, he said he hoped to be back next by the end of the month. So he may be testing it, and you know he may withdraw later. But right now he's in that field according to what's on the PGA Tour website. So that'll be a big one. Number of guys at the Monday qualifier. We may see more getting in there. But it's that time of year where if they are trying to get in, Gary, for a lot of these guys, it's just trying to warm up for the PGA Tour qualifier for their Q school, and then for those that are trying it for the first time, and then others that have been through it once, they'll be going into the first stage in September. So, late September, early October. So, we saw a lot of them at the State Open. Gary, it was an epic State Open. As we look back on what you saw up at Minocqua, what to you stands out as being maybe the takeaway for from really what was an epic State Open?
It was an epic State Open. It was a crazy leaderboard in the final round and the 36-hole finale on Wednesday, Rob, and especially in the final round when Max Lyons birdied five of the last seven holes to kind of come from behind and pass everybody and steal a State Open. And, you know, it's I hate to admit this, but I was running all over the course with Jim Kelce, our photographer, in a car. We were going back and forth between the last few groups. And I didn't really get to see Max Lyons hit any shots. And I told him that after we were done. And when I was interviewing him, I said, it's kind of embarrassing that, you know, I didn't get to see you hit any shots. And now I've got to write a story about you winning the State Open. And we were kind of laughing over that. But he understood. He said, I know you had to watch those guys, you know, in the last group and the second last group. It was crazy. And, boy, he played great, Rob. And to do that in a summer where he's hardly played any golf because he's had a summer internship with Baird in Milwaukee, just kind of an incredible story, really. He probably played less competitive golf than anyone in the top 10 or 12 guys.
I think we're seeing a theme here that less is more. Chloe Chan said that she hasn't played a ton of golf this summer, but what she has has been good. And certainly with Max Lyons, that's the case here. Opened with a 65, then shot 70-70, kind of fell back a little bit in a very crowded leaderboard throughout the week. And that 70 came in the morning session of the 36-hole finale. And then, as you said, turned it on that back nine. And it wasn't, Gary, until he got to, I believe when he got to 14 under when Cameron Husk was at 15. And we should mention that, first of all, Minocqua Country Club did a wonderful job of hosting this. And but one of the things that you know, just a reality was that not everybody's cell phone provider has a good presence. T-Mobile for me was a little bit spotty. And so live scoring was a little bit of an adventure. I saw Max get to 14 when Cameron was at 15 and saw that he was playing 17 and the 17th hole. And so I tried to scoot up there. Well, he was already on 18. By the time I got to 18, he had just hit onto the green and had a very short putt that he rolled in. I think everybody in his group rolled it in, and that got him to 16. And at that point, you thought that, you know, that we'd see some magic from, you know, Cameron Huston, and maybe a playoff. And I think there were others still in the mix at that point. You know, George Kneiser had finished with a 67 to get to 14 under. Griffin Borellis, that's a course record, with a 63 to get to 13. But that last group, I remember going out to see you guys and thinking to myself as I looked at the leaderboard, I think we finally weathered the storm here. It's going to be either Tyler Leach, Cameron Huss, or who else was in that final group?
Well, Zach Place was had the lead a little. You know, four guys at the turn, four guys had the lead, shared the lead. They were tied for the lead, and none of them were Max Lyons, which was really interesting because I would have thought one of those four guys was going to go on to win.
Zach Burry was the third guy in that last group. And
yeah,
at that point, when I got out to, I believe it was 15, it was right before the par three, and that's where Zach ran into problems off the tee and then again near the green, and then he fell back. And then Tyler Leach bogeyed, he fell back. So then it was Cameron Huston and Max Lyons, although nobody really knew that at the time. And then Cameron Huston ran into trouble. So it was crazy, but, that shows the number of great golfers we have, A, and B, we'll be going to an expanded field next year again at Black Wolf Run. Both they're going to use both the river course and the Meadow Valleys, and I can't wait. It's to me, it kind of shows that the decision, the year that they had it, what was it, 2018 down at Geneva National, and expanded the field, and then that was the first time they allowed anybody who either played high school golf in Wisconsin or college golf and may have moved away to come back and try to qualify. And because they had more spots that they, a number of guys did that. Patrick Stolpe came back and won the qualifier at the Straits course. Or I'm sorry, at the Irish course at Whistling Straits, and he's come back and qualified every year because of his good play. It makes it stronger. These guys, like, from, Marquette, Wisconsin, from out of state, they've made it stronger. Zach Place has made it stronger. And I feel terrible for Zach that, he was rolling along through, basically, not only 54 holes, but 63 holes, and then just ran into a buzzsaw on the back nine and just couldn't, couldn't finish the deal. But, I mean, so many great storylines in this state open. We may have seen the emergence of Cody Getzky, the 16-year-old from Heartland, who's at IMG. He was right there all week, which, to me, he's a kid that has that Pearson Hunt potential in him. Another kid from Heartland went on to Illinois, now playing on the PGA Tour Americas. But, more than just the talent, just, the love and the drive for the game. And, when's the last time we saw a 16-year-old, in the top 10 for most of a state open?
Yeah, very rare does that happen, Rob. And what impressed me most about him was, I think most kids who are 16 who could get into that position would be just over the moon that they, were in contention and semi-contention on the final day. He was disappointed. I mean, he expected more of himself, which tells me what he has inside. And you're right. I think we're beginning to see what Cody could and probably will become. And that's, one of the very top players in our state in a couple of years, if not sooner.
Absolutely. And we had a great presence from the WPGA section guys, Sam Weatherhead, who's now a GM at an indoor golf facility in Oconomowoc. He had a great, if not for a tough third round, he might have been up there. And then David Bach from Whistling Straits had a 66 in the third round. If you could have put David Bach's 18-hole scores and Sam Weatherhead's together, you probably would have had somebody come close to, threatening the top of that leaderboard. Each had one just bad round, and David's came kind of in the last round, a 72, when a lot of guys were going low. So, that was cool. Gary, the course, a lot of people weren't sure what kind of field we get for a state open this far north. People are willing to travel, and when the course is great, people are going to get there. I thought Minocqua Country Club was an exceptional venue for a state open.
I agree, Rob. First of all, the members really made it special. The members were fully involved as volunteers, and they bent over backwards to make sure everyone had a good time. But the course itself, I was really cool because I think there were seven or eight, birdie holes that guys, they were aiming at flag sticks on those holes because they had wedges in their hand. But there were also you know, 8 or 9 holes where you could make a double or a triple without getting yourself too much out of position. So we saw some great variance in the scores. I mean, even the guys who, you know, broke par every day, a lot of them had double bogeys on their cards, but then they were able to come back with, you know, 4 or 5 birdies. There were a ton of birdies, especially by the guys, you know, the top 15, 20 players. All of them made, you know, 15 to 25 birdies throughout the 72 holes. But then a lot of guys who weren't at the top made some birdies, but also made a lot of doubles. So it was really an interesting course that way, where the scoring was all over the map.
Well, and then I'm just seeing here, again, so much happened that final day. We're still finding stuff that, I mean, did Drake Wilcox really have 3 eagles in the final round?
I know he had 2 for sure. I didn't know he had 3.
I saw him make the eagle on 9.
Yeah.
Is this right? This might, but it's saying here that he eagled 8. I thought, boy, I remember him. Who was somebody went birdie, double bogey, eagle. Boy, but and so that would have been 3 eagles in that final round for Drake Wilcox. The long story short, though, is, you know, Drake Wilcox on the heels of a really, really good state amateur is, you know, put together a great round at the state open. I'll be interested to see how quickly he might turn professional, because that is in the cards at some point, but I think he's waiting until he feels his game is totally there. And he's about 1 round away in a 72-hole event from that happening. And really, you look at his cards, 71, 67, 70, 68, and that wasn't too shabby. He didn't have the big round like he did down at Merrill Hills. So I think he learned from that and got better. You know, Harrison Ott, very quietly, 71, 68, 68, 69. Can't wait to see what Harry does in PGA Tour, you know, Q School. And Tyler Leach, you know, I wondered if I should put him in that, is that fifth guy in the ones to watch. And he made me look pretty good, Gary.
Yeah. Yeah, Tyler had another great ball striking week. He's an elite ball striker, as good as they come, Rob. And he has struggled with the putter. He's talked about it a lot in recent years. And he thought he made some a great deal of progress this past week when he got fitted for a putter recently.
Yeah.
And, you know, made a lot of putts in the first couple rounds. But then he told me in the fourth round his putter let him down again. So it's something that's a work in progress. But it sounds like he's addressing it and doing all the right things. But I watched him in that final round. I watched him play, you know, probably 10 or 12 holes. And he is a great ball striker, Rob. Really good.
I'm down to about, well, the top 40 get invited back next year as part of the exemption category. I mean, there's 40 really solid golfers in that group. You know, I'm looking at guys in the middle there like John Langhoff. You know, had a great state open, and he's been a caddy at Erin Hills. Not sure about Sand Valley. Well, of course, Sand Valley, because he had the Sand Valley hoodie on. I know he's been on the LPGA Tour caddy list for a number of events this year, and I was really impressed with him. You know, Adam Miller came close. He had great first 2 rounds, kind of slid back a little bit with a 70 in the third, and then really struggled in the final round. But, you know, you go all the way down. I mean, Michael Nagy and Barrett Kelpin are 2 teaching professionals now in the Madison area who, you know, made a really solid debut performance. Nagy at T30 and Kelpin at T32. Nate Thompson, you know, battling back from injury, T32, had a great after a 77 in the first round, finished 70, 72, 69. We just have a lot of great golfers, Gary, and they make this event all that much better, especially when we weren't able to get the America's guys back, and we had at least one guy, Ty Kretz, going back to school early. You know, and it still was, I mean, we saw some exceptional golf up in Minocqua.
Yeah, 31 guys under par for 72 holes, 14 guys 10 under par or lower, and of course the winner, Max Lyons, at 16 under. That is unusually low scoring for a state open or a state amateur. I think the last 4 or 5 years, the state open has probably averaged 8 or 10 under for a winning score.
Yeah,
and you know, only last year Cameron Huff was the only guy under par at Century World, the champion in 2023, and so to have that many guys under par, I think that made it very exciting, Rob.
Well, Gary, in the 4 minutes we have left here on Talking.Golf, we had teased it a couple weeks ago, didn't have time for it last week. If you had to take the state open or the state amateur to a golf course that hasn't had one in a while, where would you go?
Wow. You know, it doesn't go to the western part of the state very often. I think Eau Claire Country Club has hosted a couple. But I love Troy Byrne, Rob. I'm a big fan of that course.
Yeah.
Tom Lehman was a consulting, and I think that's a Dana Fry, Mike Hurdson. I believe the same guys who did Wild Rock and Erin Hills. I love that place. So if it goes back to the west part of the state, I'd love to see it go there. What are your favorites or favorite?
Well, I should also mention that, you know, we did mention a couple weeks ago, we've got it assigned out through 28, Black Wolf Run next year, expanded field, then Tuckaway Country Club, Horseshoe Bay Golf Course in Egg Harbor. I think Gary is on those lines of a Troy Byrne. I would say once in a decade, we ought to be going to some of these, public courses like they did, the year they went to University Ridge. I thought that was a good state open. Milwaukee Country Club in 28. After that, talking to Joe Stadler, he said that La Crosse Country Club is on the list. We talked about that because cell signal at La Crosse Country Club currently can also be a little bit dicey at this point in the technology line. But that is a great course. I mean, the year they had it at Cedar Creek, I think Stricker might have won it at Cedar Creek one year. If not, he finished up there behind Ben Walter. That was way back in the day. And those are really good. I still think, Bullseye Country Club can host. They had a qualifier and one under was the winning score. I played Timber Ridge, and, Timber Ridge isn't bad. But now that it's public, it does have, a lot more divots and a lot more ball marks than it did when it was a private club. And if they can figure that out, that would be great. Heck, Gary, I'd play one at Trout Lake after you and I played it the other day. I mean, that course was in phenomenal shape. Those are some of the best greens I've putted on in a long time. I think there are a number of options up there. I think Minocqua Country Club is a unique situation because you have the member help. And, I mean, it's just a solid course. You aren't going to go that far north too often because you're going to lose guys. And so I think that's another thing, a reason. We haven't had it in the Madison area in quite some time. I still think Maple Bluff's a strong, contender. Even when they had it at Blackhawk, it was good. But I think Blackhawk's a better match play course than it is a stroke play course now with all these bombers. Nakoma, I think, had it maybe one year. It's a good golf course. I think, I would rate it a shade behind, Maple Bluff. As far as being a state open, state am course, never had one at Bishop's Bay to my knowledge. I think that would be interesting. It would be logistically tough because number 10 is out in the middle of the course. And then I think inevitably we're going to have one at TPC Wisconsin. I think that would be one that would be a Troy Byrne, Horseshoe Bay-like course, and I think that would be one that needs to be considered for an am or an open. And then we just keep rotating them to the greats, the ones, the no-brainers, the Erin Hills, the Black Wolf Runs, the Sand Valleys. We're going to the Lido next year. So I think we've got a good list. Maybe we should open it up to the listeners. If you have an idea, email us. Our email addresses are on all of our stories and at the bottom, and you can feel free to reach out to us. Be interested to hear what they have to say.
Yeah, one other course I should mention is Kenosha Country Club, which has undergone a renovation, Rob, and is hosting the U.S. Hickory Open coming up in a couple of weeks. I think that'd be a great venue for a state open. They've had it in the past. I think Schumann might have set the course record there when it was there 20-some years ago.
Yep.
I think that would be another great venue.
Indeed it would, Gary. Well, we've solved all the world's problems, and Bobby Strick would be happy. We beat deadline ourselves. So, Gary, appreciate the time as always. We appreciate everybody who listened. We heard from a lot of people up the state open. How many people listen to our podcast, whether it's in their car as they're driving to and from or at home. Appreciate all the support. And tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and always appreciate people listening to Talking Doc Golf. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.